It's been several years since we've had the chance to catch up with today's special guest. She's a talented singer, songwriter of 25-plus years, and a multi-instrumentalist who hangs her hat in Wimberley. She's perhaps best known for writing the Dixie Chicks hit Wide Open Spaces. My guest has been independently releasing albums since about 2003, and she's known for her excellent live shows. And her latest EP, Remember Who You Are, comes out this week on Friday. Joining me today on Notably Texan is Susan Gibson. It's so great to speak with you again, Susan.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for giving me some time with you.
Oh, listen, it's really a pleasure, and it has been, I meant to go and look up how many years it's been since we've talked, but it's been too long, no matter how many years, so I'm glad to have you back here today. Where do I find you in the world or in Texas today?
Well, I'm sitting on my porch in beautiful Wimberley, Texas right now,
okay. And
I get to be home this week, and then I'll leave again this weekend to go out and be gone for a week. But around Texas, I'm playing in Ben Wheeler on Sunday, Pearland on Saturday. And then we're getting to be in Hallettsville for a couple of days. They're doing a Soldier Song Reveille retreat for veterans that are interested in writing and music. And Kevin Welch and Dustin Welch are kind of in charge of the program. They're doing a week-long retreat to write with and kind of just show what your process is for writing for some of these folks that have sacrificed a lot and have great stories to tell. And
awesome.
It's going to be a great week because I'm in Texas all week long.
Well, that's always a good thing, right? Well, yeah. Speaking of Texas, Susan, tell me about your roots. Where all have you lived around Texas through your life?
You know, we moved to Burleson, Texas. I grew up kind of in the Midwest until the junior high, you know, mid-80s.
Okay.
And then we moved to Burleson, which is just south of Fort Worth. We lived there for 2 years. And then we moved to Amarillo, Texas, which is where I finished high school. And up until just recently, my folks lived in, and all the rest of my family, my sister and her kids, lived in Amarillo, Texas. So that was home for me. And then I moved to Wimberley 13 years ago. And that was, that's my Texas history. I think we just passed the mark where I've lived inside Texas as long as I've lived outside of Texas. That was a big landmark.
Nice. Congrats.
Yeah. Thanks.
We're glad to have you here. I mean, honestly.
I love being here.
The cliche is true that you got here as quick as you could, but so many people are never regretful about coming to Texas. So we're so
That's
glad that you
right.
found a home here.
You know, it's a great place to do a lot of things, but I have found, especially, you know, traveling, playing music, boy, Texas audiences are very special. You know, there's something about, I think Texas kind of honors its songwriters really well. So it's always fun to play music here and be in the, you know, be in other people's audiences, go see a show, you know, go see someone else play and be in that audience. I think Texans are raised on music and it's part of their heritage and more so than some other places. So it's great.
How I long to be evergreen.
I'm a Texas native. I've lived here all my life, so I don't really know how exactly they do it in the other states. I mean, I've traveled outside of the state, don't get me wrong, but I've always heard that we do have kind of a greater appreciation for music and, to a certain extent, culture and whatnot here in Texas, so that's really
well, you
good
know
to
what
hear.
I think, as far as music goes, Matt, I mean, I think what it is, what I have found is, you know, when you go other places, a lot of times it's like the music happens in the bars. And so that's not really a conducive place to take your kids.
Yeah.
And it seems like in Texas, for any reason at all, they'll have live music going on. They, you know, and they have fairs and festivals and, you know, I do a lot of house concerts. And, you know, it just seems like Texas is really good about finding opportunities for music that kids can go to so that it's nostalgic for them. By the time they hit high school, it's already nostalgic for them to go listen to music. Their parents took them along with all, you know, to all those things. I think that's the big difference is, you know, you see kids out at Green Hall, you know, on a Sunday afternoon because there's music happening there.
Interesting.
It's
yeah.
great.
Never really thought about it that way. Susan Gibson is our guest. Susan, is it true that you once went to go train at a forest ranger school?
I did. I went to the University of Montana for about 3 years, and I was in their forestry program.
Wow.
And I loved it. I wasn't real successful at it. I mean, I think I had misunderstood what forestry was, and instead of changing my major to something that I had more of an interest in, I just tried to keep barreling down that track. But I loved it up there. I absolutely loved it up there, and I loved living up there. And my dad's kind of roots are up in Montana, and so we have family there. And I loved my time up there. I just was not very successful at the school thing. It probably made playing music seemed even more attractive and made me work harder to make that work, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I understand.
Plan A was not going well, so.
Right. I figured it was once you found out you didn't get to put on the Smokey the Bear suit that you were like, well, forget it. This isn't for me, you know?
Well, you know, with my grades, Matt, I would have been, you know, changing out the paper towels in the rest stops in national parks. That would have, I would have been probably lowest rung on the totem pole, but it was, you know, I'd been working in national parks, which wouldn't have been too bad. So
true. No, that I just found that to be fascinating. So just an interesting thing that could have been in your life. But, you know, fans of your music like myself are so glad that you chose a different path.
So
I mean, you could have been a singing forest ranger, I suppose.
I
but
could have. I could have been out there singing to the bears.
Yes.
But nope, you're pretty fun to sing to. So I'm glad it worked out the way it did.
Well, good.
She's got thick skin, so she can take the heat. Don't go stomping around, she'll get under your feet. She can take root in a barren place, but she ain't from here, she's from outer space.
It was back around 1996. When you joined a band called the Groobies, and that was, I think that's how basically Wide Open Spaces got written, right? Was with that band?
Well, I had written a song before that band. I'd written that song actually going up to Montana to go to school and leaving my parents back in Amarillo, Texas, and you know, kind of stretching out that way. That's definitely, the Groobies is definitely how the song got heard by Lloyd Maines, because he produced records for us, and that's how ultimately the song got to the Dixie Chicks, was through Lloyd, through that band. That we had a couple guys in that band, Scott Malott and Mike Devers, that were tenacious about getting Lloyd to produce a record for us. And, you know, it's funny, he produced three of our band records. They're all great records. You know, he gets a lot of submissions for music. I'm sure now even more so, but back in the 90s, I'm sure he was getting tens of CDs a week to get him to produce records for people. And so I heard him tell this story the other day about how Scott and Mike, you know, would just call. Just, they were kind of pesty about it, but it's good because it, you know, they didn't give up calling. I mean, I did not know Lloyd Maines at the time. You know, I didn't know who he was in the music scene at the time. I was only in the music scene in as far as I was in the Groobies.
And for anybody out there who's maybe going, well, gosh, I don't know, maybe I've heard Wide Open Spaces, of give folks an example of how you sing it and how the Dixie Chicks took your song and recorded it and popularized it. Here's that clip.
Wide-eyed and grinning, she never tired, but now she won't be coming back with the rest. If these are life's lessons, she'll take.
So many folks are quite familiar with the Dixie Chicks rendition. Not as many folks have heard your rendition. We were listening to that live version from the Live at the Bugle Boy release from recently. So many artists like yourself have written these amazing songs, and other bands, you know, have just sort of lucked out, I guess, as it were, and ended up taking those songs to the charts. So you just never know who's going to write these songs that become those integral songs of your life. People like Susan Gibson, my guest today on KETR. Do you remember what inspired you to write, like, your first songs all those years years ago?
I do. It's kind of weird how you see themes in your music, you know, in writing. And I can totally see the theme in my music. I started with my first song. It was called See the Beauty of the Change, which is kind of a mouthful of a title. But my mom was doing she was part of a Methodist women's group, and they were having a weekend retreat for empty nest, new empty nest, parents. And so I was going to go play songs, and at the time I was just playing, you know, Sean Colvin and Mary Chapin Carpenter and Tracy Chapman and, all these contemporary female folk singer songs. So I decided I wanted to try to write a song for her retreat. And I did, and it was fine, and it was good, and it was all right. It was good enough to make me go, aha, when I write my own songs, I don't have to try to sound like somebody else. And so I had this specific event to write something towards and a deadline to do it. But the reward of that was that light bulb coming on, like, oh, when you write your own songs, you really can't do it wrong. You know, who's mm-hmm. to tell you that that's not right? You know what I mean? It was a really freeing thing to do after learning songs and trying to sound like the person that everyone knew that were singing that song. You know, it was really a kind of a cool awakening. I was just starting to be a freshman in college. That was my first freshman year.
Okay. Yes.
I didn't write Wide Open Spaces until my third freshman year, Matt.
Well, those many freshman years are important, you know?
Yes. So that's exactly right.
So this recent album of yours I had just mentioned, Live at the Bugle Boy, has a great cut on it called The Second Hand. I wonder if there's any insight you can provide on that tune before we listen to it.
I got to come and sing with Elizabeth Will on her album release that she did there at the Bugle Boy. And coming home from that gig, I had a car wreck, and it wrecked my van, and I ended up in the hospital with a broken arm. And so that was February 13th of 2010. You know, I relived that moment. It was just such a bad moment that just sent my life into a different direction, you know, because I broke my arm and wrecked my car, which took me out of the traveling musician business for a while. I kind of replayed that moment in my head a lot. And then, you know, and then things started looking up. I was doing physical therapy on my arm and stuff so that I could kind of play again. And I was messing around with the guitar riff, and it just seemed appropriate to, you know, the hook line in that song is God is in the second hand, meaning in the moment as it's going by, not, you know, not in the hour, not in the day, the week, the month, or the year. You know what I mean? It's right in that moment. And by trying to rethink the one that ended me up in the ditch, I was really missing a lot of beautiful things along the way. I think as I've gotten older, I've started writing songs to hear myself say certain things several times a week over a microphone. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
To kind of write for my own headspace a little bit. And that was one of those songs, like, to remind myself, hey man, pay attention. Don't be thinking in the future, and don't be regretting, you know, what's behind you. Just be in that moment that you're in. And I love that reminder. I need that reminder.
I better hold a hand out, toss out a few seeds, stop trying to figure out which birds I'm gonna feed. Already living in the promised land, and the clock is ticking, and God is in the second hand. In the second hand. In the second hand.
Susan, I wanted to give you a second to tell me about these songwriting workshops and coaching sessions that you've been doing.
Thanks,
because
y'all.
That's a whole separate aspect of your career that people might not know about.
Yeah, you know, I started doing this. I got my first chance to ever do any kind of teaching was for the Real Life, Real Music Songwriters Experience that happens in the Woodlands. It's a kids camp, and they do a couple weeks a year. And I loved that. I loved working with the kids. You know, it made me really realize that fear is a learned behavior, and being afraid and self-conscious of what you have to say and how you're going to say it is really something we learn as we go along for whatever reason, because these kids that I was working with were just, they didn't know anything about writing songs, but they knew exactly what they needed to know, which is, what do I want to talk about? How do I want to say it? You know what I mean? And it was so invigorating to work with them and see how bold they were. That kind of shaped my teaching, was working with those kids. I think if I would have started on adults, my approach would be a lot different, and it taught me a lot about my own writing process. And so, you know, it kind of began from parents of those kids saying, hey, do you do any adult workshops? And it was like, well, no, not really. And then it was like, well, you know, why not? You know, I do a lot of workshops with people that have aspirations for, you know, putting out a record or doing that kind of stuff. I work with songwriters that I know, and I work with people that it's on their bucket list to write a song. I do some workshops. I do one-on-one Skype sessions where we can talk over the computer. If you're in Boise, Idaho, and I'm in Dallas, Texas, that we can do those kind of things.
Tell me, why should anyone even care about public radio?
Anything that's supported by the community and volunteer run is probably going to have more interesting content. It's going to come from many different sources. So, you know, the music is going to be balanced. The information is going to be balanced. I love public radio for the fact that I get to hear stuff on there that I can't hear anywhere else. I mean, it is an absolute resource, whether you're a musician, a music fan. I think it's one of the best things we've got going in radio for sure, but even in the world of podcasts and all the other different kind of media that we've got, I think public radio still wins on every level.
Thank you so much for being a part of the show today, Susan. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for the time. And hello, and thank you to your listeners.
Don't watch the television. I don't listen to the talking heads. I don't consider it human interest. There's Michael O'Connor for the Blues instead. I don't take the daily paper. I don't like the way it spins. Lost and found obituaries makes me miss my next of kin.